Welcome to Optimal Health for Busy Entrepreneurs, the podcast for busy and high-performing entrepreneurs and leaders who are looking to create more energy and optimize their health while upgrading their brain and personal performance with precision. I am your host, Julian Hayes II. I've been involved with health and performance for over a decade. This podcast was created for the high performer who is unapologetically ambitious, the one who moves at a fast pace and operates with an edge, the one who wants to become superhuman. Nothing here is fluff, gimmicky, or feel good. I have little to no interest in simply helping you improve your life. I want to help transform it. By listening to this podcast, expect to have a body that feels just as good as it looks. Expect to possess a swagger and style that gives off an infectious vibe. Expect to command the stage or any boardroom you walk into with your executive presence. And lastly, expect to become your most enhanced self so you can live a limitless life. Now, let's get to the show. To another episode of Optimal Health for Busy Entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Julian Hayes II, back at it again in the saddle, in the cockpit, and many other analogies that I could probably share, but I'm going to stay on track here. Now, today's episode is a very important one, and I say this a lot, but it's not, and it's also not as if the other episodes are important, but today's topic is going to cover an area of health that is deeply connected to aging, health, fitness, losing body fat, and overall just your state as a human being and your overall human system. And that area of discussion that we're going to talk about is none other than regulating and optimizing our blood sugar. Now, when we think about blood sugar, higher blood sugar is going to promote these accelerated rates of aging. It's going to promote basically overall lower levels of health. This add these things up, and this also makes losing body fat more difficult. Now, to bring a genetic component into it, individuals who have a propensity towards this insulin resistance will typically report a more difficult time losing weight than others while following a similar diet, and despite being maybe practice in total adherence to that diet that they're on. And I can personally speak to this as my genetics indicate that I'm someone who has this increased genetic propensity towards insulin resistance. Now, here's the thing, and this is why the genetic tests that I do, they're not commercially available because your genes are not your destiny. And I've said this numerous times. All our genes really tell us is it tells us and gives us clues about our past, but we can mold our future to our liking. That is the beauty of epigenetics. So I might have this propensity towards insulin resistance, and other people have as well. But this is just indicating that since I have this propensity, I have a higher likelihood, should I not adhere to a more solid nutritional and lifestyle program. So this is just one of the many areas that I look into when I'm running clients' genetic panels. And sometimes, you know, they might get worried if they fall in this category. But genetics is really only one piece of the puzzle. You know, looking at the labs, you know, along with tests such as the glycan age, this is going to help paint a much more accurate and comprehensive picture of what's really going on inside your body. But before I get into these three tests, these three blood tests that I'm going to share, and some general numbers to keep in mind when you go for your next checkup, whether this is your annual review, which I recommend you should probably do more than just an annual review, but I'll save that topic for another day. Now, I want to briefly discuss what insulin is and what insulin resistance is as well. And I also have note here, I need to give my this is, I guess, call it a disclaimer, that I'm not a doctor. 1 year of school was enough for me. I left. I never played one on TV. I flirted with a few. I'm not really sure why that's relevant. Maybe blame it on caffeine and blame my genes for being a slow metabolizer. So the caffeine is still in my system right now. And on a side tangent, I don't know how people drink 3 to 5 cups of coffee a day do it. I don't get it. I totally don't get it. 2 cups and I'm kind of tweaking. So it's very interesting. But let's get back to insulin and insulin resistance here. So what is insulin? Let's start at a very basic level. Insulin is a hormone, and sometimes there's a misnomer about this, but insulin is very much a hormone, and it's going to regulate the amount of glucose, or you can call it sugar, whichever word you want to use, in your blood. And when you hear insulin resistance, this means that your body requires greater amounts of insulin in order to drive these blood glucose levels down. So think of insulin as opening up the gates of your cells, right? And once these gates are open up, you're taking in this glucose from each time you eat, right? And when it's not as responsive, these sugars are going to circulate in your blood longer. You don't want this. And this is what causes quote unquote damage to your body. Now, sugar, for example, can form these cross links of sorts. And a more proper name is AGEs, which stands for advanced glycation end products. And this cross-link glues these proteins together. It's like elastin and collagen, gluing them. And this cross-linking here is making these tissues stiffer. And with these tissues being stiffer, this is going to contribute to higher blood pressure and, you know, wrinkles as well is something that comes along with this as well. And, you know, there's an awesome tool now that I have as part of the assessment that I do. It's called the glycan age test, which is super awesome. It's also used to talk about, you can kind of correlate it with biological age and chronological age as well. So really cool. And so it's one of the things in the anti-aging assessment that I use with clients to determine just basically what type of direction that we're going to take this at initially. So let's talk about insulin resistance. So when we increase insulin resistance, this is the first step toward quote unquote pre-diabetes and typically leading to type 2 diabetes, which is for all intents and purposes, is caused and defined by a strong insulin resistance. So now we have these sustained high levels of blood glucose, and this is going to accelerate this biological aging due to increasing free radicals, which then can damage your DNA, damage the lipids, and damage proteins. So all sorts of things are going on when this happens. And these damaged cellular components is very much a hallmark of aging. And if you aren't familiar with what the hallmarks of aging are and what that is, go back and listen to that two-part series I did where I went into detail on each of the hallmarks of aging. It's 9 of them. And I gave a pretty high-level overview and a few things that you can do toward each one. And there's a lot more that's even available now. And that episode is just a few months old. So this world moves really fast. So now my father, along with other relatives, they were diabetics. And this basically became, I should say this, insulin resistance basically became a gateway to other issues coming down the road, such as dialysis, heart disease, losing limbs. A lot of times you would see diabetics, especially those who really have issues with their sugar, you'll start to see them lose lower limbs in the foot problems. That's a big one as well, because they get neuropathy as well, and they can't feel when maybe they get a wound or a cut. It's not going to heal. They don't know it's there. It gets infected, and you know the deal after that. So I have stories. I can go for days about seeing that type of stuff. And then you also have things like macular degeneration. We also have weight issues and many, many, many other things. But I hate harping on diseases. I hate just looking at this world from sick care. So I prefer not to hamper on these diseases and these illnesses, because for all intents and purposes, they're situations that can very much be mitigated with the right tools and also attacked early in the process. Early treatment matters. Now, also a big reason is that many people, and this is with weight as well, they unintentionally start to mesh their weight problems, their illnesses, their symptoms. They start to mesh it with their identity. And this hampers recovery and growth because your identity is forged as having these particular issues. So as we continue along here, as we get older, we most definitely automatically will become more insulin resistant by default. Now, the key word there is by default. It's simply a part of nature. It's part of the aging process. But as you can guess, it doesn't have to be this way, and it shouldn't be this way. And you can considerably slow down the rate of aging. You can considerably slow down the rate of insulin resistance. You don't have to follow these conventional paths that society tells us when it comes to our health or our life in general. You know, typically the aging process is described as you become fatter, you become dumber, you become slower, you become colder. And that just never made sense to me. So you might think, okay, then if I don't want insulin resistance, then what do I want? Well, the word for that we use is insulin sensitivity. So the more sensitive and less resistant that your body is to insulin, the healthier that you'll be. Now, when it comes to this blood sugar management and it comes to overall metabolic health, you want to be insulin sensitive and to be as optimized as possible in this area, the best of your abilities. So with all of this said, as kind of like an introduction and an overall idea of what insulin resistance is and a little bit about how the blood sugar and glucose works inside your body after eating meals and everything, there's various blood sugar markers to look at. And I'm just going to go over three main ones that you'll see with your conventional lab work. Now, you may have to get your doctor or practitioner, whoever you go to use all of these. But nevertheless, these three are the ones that I always use with a client, or that I always advise clients to ask their doctor to get as well. So if you went to the doctor recently or just the last time, and for whatever reason you wanted to say, hey, doctor, nurse practitioner, can I see my panel? You would probably only see one of these on there, and that is your fasting glucose. And fasting glucose has some benefit, but you want to also get your fasting insulin and your hemoglobin A1C. You want to get those two as well in combination with the fasting glucose, because this is going to give you a much more complete picture of your overall blood sugar. So let's first dive into fasting glucose, since it's the most commonly known. So the fasting glucose test, this is a test that is simply measuring and is simply the result of a blood sample that's taken after you fast for at least 8 hours. You've probably been told by your doctor before your appointment, make sure you don't eat anything after midnight. That's probably one of the reasons why they want you to fast, and they want to make sure you at least have 8 hours in between. And now, a higher than normal fasting glucose level could be a sign of an unhealthy metabolism. But as I said just a few moments ago, it's not the complete picture. So let's pump the brakes a little bit. Now, the number that you'll see on here, typical ranges in the literature will say anything less than anything less than 100 milligrams per deciliter is good for anyone that isn't diabetic. I 100% disagree with this. I think that's way too high of a number. And there's many in my circle who do as well, and they're in a clinical setting, and they've had probably six times the experience that I have, and they've been doing this much longer than me. And a more ideal range is to be below 90 with your fasting glucose. And I actually personally prefer, in a perfect world, if it's below 85, actually. So this is just what I've seen with my own eyes and through discussion with other people who have worked with tons and tons of people, and what they've seen has correlated with some of the more optimal results. Because we're not just trying to be good or average or just get by. We're trying to be optimized. And then after we're optimized, we're trying to be enhanced. That's a total different conversation than what a lot of the world has when it comes to our health and fitness. But as always, consult with your licensed medical professional. So I tried to say this in my commercial voice, like, you know, they say it on TV, but I still got to work on changing my vocal tones. Maybe I'll get a vocal coach one day. But anyway, let's move on to the next test here. And that is our hemoglobin A1C. You can just say heme A1C or just A1C, whichever floats your boat. So the second marker here, heme A1C is going to be identified on your panel. If you're looking for it, it will say HbA1c. This is a measure for glycation. I mentioned that word earlier in this episode. The more glycation you have, the faster that your body is aging. And on that test that I mentioned, your biological age most likely will be higher than your chronological age. Some typically, when you have a lot of glycation that's going on, and also with the more glycation that you have, this is also going to lead to a higher risk of various age-related diseases, or my favorite word, situations, as I call them. And so our A1C here, it's a marker, and it's going to measure your average blood glucose levels over the last 3 months, which clearly is easy to understand why this could be a benefit, because this is giving you a comprehensive screening of how your body has been performing compared to just the last 8+ hours in the case of the fasting glucose test. Now, as far as some ranges go here, you know, once again, this is probably not a surprise. I don't agree with the standard conventional numbers. Numbers that I recommend for A1C is less than 5.5 for balance, or another word is homeostasis, and less than 5.3 for optimization. And I saw a study that I added here, and it's a study published in the International Journal of Preventive Medicine. It interestingly enough found that the A1C test is a more accurate predictor for future blood sugar dysregularities, along with potentially being a better predictor of stroke, heart disease, and all-cause mortality. So let's move on to the last one here, and this is fasting insulin. As the name applies, fasting insulin measures the level of insulin in your blood. It's a measure of insulin resistance. The lower the levels of your fasting insulin, the better. Now, and to no surprise here, increased insulin resistance is going to accelerate aging, along with making losing body fat more difficult as well. And in some cases, you might get the first two markers, but don't forget, fasting insulin needs to be included as well. And I found another study here in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And in this study, it suggested that a steadily increase each time in fasting insulin resulted in a 25% increase in the risk of hypertension and a 16% increase in the risk of coronary heart disease. Pardon me on that. So the actual number in increments was 7 UIU per milliliter. And I wanted to be specific, as I believe that it may be shared differently with different labs, and internationally, I think it might be a different system. So I don't remember off the top of my head. So I just wanted to be a little more specific with that. Now, typically most labs, they're going to have a range from 3 to 24. Now, I've seen some that it's like a 2 as well. So it just depends on the different labs. Now, a typical good target that I recommend is to have a fasting insulin that's less than 5. So less than 5 on the fasting insulin, less than 5.5 for A1C, for balance, less than 5.3 of A1C for optimization and less than 90 for fasting glucose, and optimal less than 85 for that fasting glucose. And as I said, these are just recommendations, things I've seen with my own eyes. Consult with your provider to do that. So as we land this ship here, having all three of these are key. They tell a very specific story within your entire human system. When you combine these three tests here, you get such a more accurate portrayal and you get a lot more data and information on what specific interventions to do. And as you know, it is all about precision. You're a busy entrepreneur. You're a busy intrapreneur. You're just a busy person who wants to live the good life. You have a lot of things to do. So you definitely need to be precise and not waste time guessing and hoping that a strategy is going to work. So this is why you want to get all three of these numbers. So speaking of interventions, there's a tons and tons of things that you can do to improve your metabolic health and your blood sugar. I could probably go 2 hours just listing different things. I don't want to do that. So I want to quickly rattle off a few. So the first one is the captain obvious of them all, and that is to monitor your blood sugar levels. You cannot manage what you don't measure. And another one is to consume less sugary foods. Another one is to simply fast. You don't have to do any crazy 3-day fast or 20 hours, 4 hours on. A simple 12-hour fast is a good starting point. Something that I typically do, I typically 3 hours before, 3 hours between my dinner and before I go to bed, say 8 hours of sleep. That's 11 hours. Take an hour. When I wake up, you're at 12 hours already. It's that simple. Consume more vegetables, especially the ones like broccoli and cauliflower. And don't pay attention to government food pyramids. I'm not sure if people do, but I just kind of wanted to mention that. The food pyramid is terrible. The food pyramid, the government food pyramid, it's probably as relevant as cassette tapes and VHS players. That's kind of how I look at that. Another thing to do here is to replace unhealthy fats with more healthy fats. And what did I mean by that? Well, unhealthy fats, quote unquote, you could say. Trans fats, most definitely. A lot of omega-6 fatty acids. A lot of saturated fats. Now, key thing here before, you know, all the keto and carnivore people come at me, not all saturated fats. So keep that distinction in mind. And in general, I typically recommend someone to consume a lot more olive oil, fatty fish, and you can throw chia seeds in there. I'm biased. I like chia seeds in my smoothies, so that's why I said chia seeds. Maybe they're not for everyone. Exercise is another one. Exercise leads to an increased uptake of glucose in the muscles. It's increasing mitochondrial biogenesis. And another important one, especially with the world that we live in now, and especially if you find yourself glued to all of this stuff that's going on in the world, learn to manage your stress. Stress is good. Stress can be bad. It's all perspective and how we learn to deal with it. So find a way to mitigate this and prioritize getting quality sleep. Another cool one here that I made sure to jot down is to consume more spices and herbs such as turmeric, ginger, garlic, thyme, oregano, cinnamon, and so many other herbs that can help improve insulin resistance. Sometimes the smallest things to do, the smallest habits can lead to some very large and beneficial results. And lastly, I have to mention this, and that is to supplement with berberine. It might be maybe my favorite supplement now. Maybe. It's definitely getting up there as I'm learning more and more about it. And I might want to do a solo episode on it. But berberine has a nickname to some. I don't know where it came from, but it's a metabolism guardian. Sounds pretty cool, a little nerdy. And they call it that though, because it's going to help with weight loss. It can perhaps help with blood sugar balancing and supporting your healthy lipid profiles as well. And it also has these antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, AMPK activating benefits. And I've even seen some studies that suggests it's even more effective than metformin. Now, I have to dive into this more before coming to a definitive conclusion on this, but I think that's very interesting because metformin and berberine do similar things. Metformin, of course, is you'll have to get a prescription for it, and berberine you don't. So that's something that's interesting and to keep in mind as well for those of you out there who struggle with your blood sugar and are looking to lose weight. And lastly, there's benefits revolved around helping with these advanced glycation end products that I mentioned earlier in the episode, inflammation and oxidation. And these are some of the main pathways for aging and disease. There's so many more things that I can add here, but I don't want to make this list too overwhelming. And so I'm going to share the supplement that I mentioned with berberine, because this is what I use. And I'll share the one that I use. It has a few more things in there. It has a helpful peptide as well. So it's kind of an advanced supplement, but it's I've been really impressed with it. And it'll be over on the show notes. So with all of this said, thank you for tuning in for another episode. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your ears. It's definitely not taken for granted. I know you could be anywhere in the world listening to anything else, but you decided to stick it out. You decided to take your time and give your attention to listen to this episode. And so I highly am grateful for it. So if I could be of any assistance, whether this is through just a general question, you can do this over on social or email. Maybe it's an episode suggestion, or it's coaching and enrolling in one of my anti-aging and performance programs. If that's of interest, don't hesitate for a second to reach out. And until next time, stay awesome, be limitless, and as always, go be superhuman. Peace.